This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buffalo School Board member Larry Scott is with us on the WBEN Trocare College Lifeline. We're looking at last night's school board meeting. Superintendent Tonja Williams-Knight is getting ready to retire in June. Larry, what's the latest on the search for an interim superintendent and a permanent successor?
Good morning, Brian, Susan. So first, with the search firm, we were aggressive and had two special meetings the previous two Wednesdays, and we reached a decision to appoint Erie-1-BOCES, Dr. Michael Capuana, the superintendent of Erie-1-BOCES, to lead our search for a permanent superintendent. And in regards to the interim superintendent, we are planning to name that person, identify that person in April, probably our April business meeting.
Where is the search going to take place? Do we have an idea? Are we looking for local? Is it a national search? Are there parameters that have been set up? Or is it just, hey, whoever's the best available candidate, that's what we want?
It will be open to all. What I liked when the board leadership met with Dr. Capuana is that he is a former Buffalo teacher. He had knowledge of Buffalo. He's done these searches with suburban districts in the area. And he had already, even though we were just having an initial meeting, a very aggressive timeline to roll out to get this work started if, in fact, we were to choose him. And it also heavily encompassed involving the public. So they do a process called thought exchange where they gather input from the public and then it aggregates information for us to then see as board members what the public are looking for from a superintendent. And then they also organize focus groups that they get additional feedback from in regards to, again, what the public and those constituency groups are looking for in the next superintendent.
It was brought up at last night's meeting, Larry, that the schools have a $73 million deficit. Was that news to the board?
No, actually. We anticipated a deficit for this year going into the budget last year when we approved it. And we decided that we were going to use our reserves, which thankfully are healthy at this point, to cover that deficit. And the reason being is that we knew that we had to make reductions based on the federal stimulus money ending, and we decided, the superintendent actually decided, that she was going to do that over 2 to 3 years rather than just 1 year major cuts. And so we are now entering our next budget where we are facing right now initially a $117 million deficit, which is obviously much larger. But it's still early on in the budget process. The state still needs to approve the budget for next year. which could change things, and we are still gathering budgets from the schools. And so there's still a lot of work, a lot of steps that need to occur before we get to a point of finalizing a budget for next year.
Now, where is it expected that this shortfall will be made up? Where might cuts take place over the next couple of years?
Well, you know, we're going to have to get creative. And we were anticipating that there would be more retirements this going into next year. And right now that the number of retirements is far lower than what was anticipated. There's the idea of we have teachers on special assignment, teachers that are acting as coaches. And in order to lessen the impact of direct education support services to our students in the classrooms, some of those teachers may need to be returned to classroom assignments. I personally have seen that with the federal stimulus, that not only did we use that money to invest in positions, but we also directed it towards some costly programs. And I think we need to have serious discussions about some of the programs that we're spending millions of dollars on, whether they're effective and whether they're delivering the results that we expect. And I would rather see some of those programs that are costing millions of dollars eliminated before we're cutting counselors, instrumental music, or reading teachers.
Can you give us an example of like a program that would be under the microscope, a costly thing that you're kind of questioning if it's paying off?
I will, and I'm going to get some heat for this because I know there's some people that are very supportive of the program, but WASED is a program, a STEM program, that, again, we're potentially looking at another $4 million directing it to that program, and to me, that's just not sustainable. I'm not understanding why a program is requiring such an annual heavy cost, and I think that needs to seriously be looked at. Certainly, it provides interesting activities for our students, but at a time when we're talking about potentially cutting important staff, I think that needs to be part of the conversation.
So this is an example then of a program that was added with American Rescue Funds or stimulus, as you said, and the funding has stopped, but you're continuing to carry the program.
Right. Now it's coming out of our own general fund in place of keeping potential important staff. And the thing is that I have kids in Buffalo Public Schools, and when we're spending that amount of money, I expect to hear and feel how my students are my own children are being impacted by that program, and it's been very minimal when we're spending that amount of money on the program.
We've seen this in other districts before, you know, programs that are very popular that might actually work really well, but they're only being utilized by a handful, at most, of kids. Is that the kind of thing? Are there a lot of those types of things in Buffalo schools?
That's, you know, one example that I'm hearing about where we're spending millions on supplies, and I don't have a good grasp on how those supplies are being used in the classrooms with our students. So it just seemed like when you have a lot of money to spend, there's a lot of people that then become interested in getting that money, and I think we need to do a better job at examining whether directing funds to particular groups, programs, is truly worthwhile and necessary for our students.
Well, Larry, thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.